Happy Friday afternoon. This is Ozarks at Large for February 19th, 2021 on 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead, a political and environmental game of tug-of-war continues over a 2015 Clean Water Rule. President Obama enacted it. President Trump rescinded it, and now President Biden has re-implemented it. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich explains what it might mean for Arkansas, and she talks with Arkansas Senator John Bozeman about the matter. And we have Becca Martin Brown, the features editor with the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, with us to tell us about a classical concert and a hike at Devil's Den this weekend, both to be enjoyed virtually. Her suggestions for weekend entertainment in our second half hour. After our show, it will be time for Science Friday. Today, Dr. Anthony Fauci answers key questions about COVID-19 vaccines, variants, and when we might be able to get a new normal. Plus, Amazon warehouse workers in Alabama are voting on whether they want a union. Google employees just got one. We'll have a discussion about how tech companies affect their employees. Science Friday from 1 until 3 this afternoon. And join Dr. Caitlin Ahrens for Scratching the Surface at 2:04 during Science Friday on KUAF. The Arkansas Department of Health is counting 253 new cases of COVID-19 after a 24-hour period of reduced testing because of the weather. The new report includes 141 confirmed new cases, 112 probable new cases. The ADH is also adding 10 deaths to the state's fatalities from the virus. Now more than 5,300 Arkansans have died from coronavirus. Active cases dropped by 916, but hospitalizations increased by 23 patients. The Washington Water Authority is asking for continued water conservation. At the agency's website, an alert issued yesterday stresses the need for customers, especially those in South Fayetteville and in Farmington, to conserve water. This because of the excessive use of dripping water to keep pipes from freezing. The notice points out water usage over the past few days is up 67 to 150% in parts of the authority's region. The Northwest Arkansas Council is appointing Ryan Cook as executive director of the council's Healthcare Transformation Division. The division was established in 2019 as a way to help transform the region into a healthcare destination. Cook comes to the position from the Cleveland Clinic, where he led efforts for the clinic in the Middle East and North Africa. The Arkansas Razorback women's basketball game, originally scheduled for last night against Mississippi in Bud Walton Arena, now tonight. Tip-off scheduled for 6. The weather caused that delay. The Arkansas softball team may have had 4 games this weekend at the Maverick Classic in Texas canceled, but yesterday the team announced it was heading to Lake Charles, Louisiana for the Cowgirl Classic. Arkansas will play doubleheaders tomorrow and Sunday against Louisiana Tech and McNeese State. Arkansas's home opener is Thursday against North Dakota State. Clear tonight, lows in the mid-teens in the Arkansas River Valley, upper teens tonight in northwest Arkansas. Tomorrow, sunshine, morning wind chills below freezing, but afternoon temperatures in the mid-40s. The Sunday forecast, a 40% chance of rain, with afternoon highs again in the mid-40s. This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. Are you staying warm, Michael?
Yes, sir. At least I'm not based in Texas, so I am staying warm.
I know we got to, we for a bit dipped to minus 20 in Fayetteville. Do you know what the lowest you got in Fort Smith was? It was below zero.
Yeah, it was below zero. I do not know. I think I saw a minus 16. Oh. But don't hold Garrett Lewis will be all over me if that's wrong, so don't hold me to that.
Well, let's start off. One of the landmark restaurants in Fort Smith is Taliano's. I think everyone in Fort Smith certainly knows about it. Many of us on the other side of the tunnel know about it. And Tom Candelera, who was synonymous with Taliano's, has passed away.
It was a surprise, but as you said, very iconic, and I think he was as iconic. Mr. Calderera, he and Jim Cadelli opened the restaurant in 1970. And it's still in the old renovated Sparks Mansion that was built in 1887. It's on the National Register of Historic Places. It is a great place, great experience. If you've not been there, you've got to go there. I know we often see on these food shows these great restaurants in different states, different cities, different countries. But we have one right here in this area of Arkansas that is just as, in terms of good experience, good service, and good food. Tom was passed away recently. He was 90 years old. But this is a guy who everybody in town knew. You know, often we will hear people when somebody passes say, everybody liked him, or he never had an enemy or whatever. And sometimes that can be hyperbole. But with Mr. Caldera, I am almost certain. I can't imagine anyone not liking him. He took everybody in. He was super generous. Focused in the Fort Smith area. He did so much for a lot of different homeless programs, not just giving of his money, but giving of his time. They would, for many decades, they would do soup twice a week. They'd prepare it and serve it at some of these homeless food banks, food shelters. And he was always doing things like that. He was recognized in 2009. He was given a humanitarian award by the National Restaurant Association for his work. So he's definitely going to be missed. Fortunately, he had a pretty strong family behind him. Joe Caldera, his son, has been running the restaurant operation for a while now, but Tom's a great guy. I got to know him personally. One of his grandkids was on a volleyball team with my daughter, one of those traveling league teams. And we would be in Kansas City or Oklahoma City, and there'd be Mr. Caldera and Dorothy's wife. And just, wow. I remember I was sitting, believe it or not, I would get a little animated sometimes at the refs during those games. Yeah, and I think I was sitting next to him one time, and I said a few things, and I sat down back next to Mr. Caldera, and I felt bad about it. I thought, God, here's the most kind of, I feel like I'm sitting next to the Pope here. And I just said these things, and he looked over at me and he said, what you said. So he had a good way of, making you feel good too. But the big loss for the community, but he definitely left a legacy, and he'll be missed.
Well, Leadership Crawford County has not been around as long as Taliano's, but it has established itself as something of a landmark in Crawford County. And there's something new as of now for Leadership Crawford County. What is that?
Well, they have hired, they've been working for the past 20 years with volunteer leadership. And I would say, frankly, they've done very well. But they've hired Pat Powell, and she is, it's an excellent hire. I would have never thought of these two going together. But she, for almost four decades, has been the vice president of human resources for Golden Living. Before then, it was Beverly Enterprises. So she has extensive executive experience, extensive leadership experience. I mean, you might have hired somebody with a master's degree, but this is someone who's been there, done it for decades, worked with thousands of people, thousands of different personalities. So there, she is hired and has been brought on board to really take the program to the next level. And it's going to be interesting to see what she does with the program. I don't know her that well, but what I do know of her, I'm going to be very surprised if she doesn't set an entirely new direction. Again, the program has done well. It's been active for 20 years. And I think, Kyle, sometimes volunteer-driven organizations don't last 20 years. Right. They're hard to keep those things going. And you just have different personalities, different challenges, often financial. The folks in Van Buren have done it. And in Crawford County, it's not just Van Buren, but Crawford County should be committed for keeping it going. But it's going to be interesting to see what Pat does. She's already talked about, doing some new things in terms of new experiences for the classes. I think folks I know the Fort Smith Regional Chamber operates the Leadership Fort Smith program. If I was them, I would, I'd stay tuned. There may be a few things maybe a few ideas you're going to be able to steal from Pat Powell in the near future.
Finally, I know you and I before have talked about how being a mayor of a city is rarely a job that comes without stress. Reading this interview that you have with Joe Hurst, the mayor of Van Buren, that you can find right now at talkbusiness.net, nothing about being a mayor over the last 18 months sounds like something I'd want to do.
Yeah, you definitely want to do that. And of course, he did. Think about he was elected. One of the first things out of the box is we had the historic river flood. I think everyone remembers. So we had to deal with that. And you know, the flooding just lasts for a few days, but the impacts last for a long time. So in the midst, so as they were coming out of that in 2019, kind of getting back on their feet, then this pandemic hit. And so, and that's obviously not just Van Buren, but global. But I almost likened it to somebody handing the keys to a new car. And as you get in, you realize that both right side tires are busted up and have to be replaced. So you do get that replaced. You get back in the car ready to go, and you notice the left side tires are all busted and have to be replaced. He just hasn't been able to get the car going through no fault of his own. But Tina Dale had a good interview with him, and he's ready to get going. They had several good projects lined up, and if we can get this pandemic behind us, I think he's going to, and he had a lot of community support behind these projects. And so if the pandemic will end, or if we can get it significantly contained, they'll move forward. A large part of that is getting back on the downtown, the streetscape improvement, a lot of other programs to improve downtown. They had a broad economic development plan for the city. They were in the middle of trying to get a rebranding effort. They were working with University of Central Arkansas on a rebranding effort and a business retention program. I mean, and that doesn't even address, he had what I would think are pretty aggressive goals for his Parks and Recreation Department. So he had some really not, I mean, these aren't just, changing the blinds, so to speak. You know, these weren't just window dressing projects. These were significant efforts to try to improve the economy, change the look of the city, improve the parks and recreation, improve, you know, quality of life amenities. But 2 years, you know, right, almost 2 years into his, he's just putting out fires. So for many reasons, let's hope here in the near future he's able to get back on task.
Well, I like the headline, too, that's at talkbusiness.net, cautiously optimistic. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, for quote, normal progress.
Right, so, right.
I don't know what, I'm not sure what normal progress is going to be, but let's hope we can find something that sure looks like it.
And you can find that interview and other items that we've talked about at talkbusiness.net. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. He talks to us almost every Friday. Michael, stay warm. We'll talk to you next week when February's almost done.
I know, and it's almost done, and we're going to be playing some baseball soon.
Yeah, yeah. Razorbacks open up Saturday night. Not here.
Yep, I'm one of those Johnny come lately to the baseball program, but I'm getting every year I get more and more excited about it.
It's going to be a good one this year, and hopefully we get the entire season in.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, thanks, Kyle.
Thank you, Michael.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from the Malco Theaters, offering reserved recliner seating and following all COVID-19 safety guidelines at the Rogers Cinema Grill and Razorback Cinema Grill and IMAX Theater in Fayetteville. Showtimes, tickets, and information available at malco.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. In the first months of his presidency, Donald Trump issued an executive order rescinding the Waters of the United States rule, protecting certain streams, wetlands, and groundwater from protection under the Clean Water Act. The federal Clean Water Rule was originally signed into law by President Barack Obama in May 2015. Soon after taking office last month, President Joe Biden issued an executive order to reinstate President Obama's 2015 rule. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, Arkansas Republican Senator John Bozeman joined 23 colleagues in signing a resolution to uphold the former president's rule.
Last April, the Environmental Protection Agency and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers published President Donald Trump's Navigable Waters Protection Rule in the Federal Register, redefining the waters of the United States. That's a technical term defining the scope of jurisdiction for Clean Water Act regulations on our nation's waterways. Trump issued his executive order in 2017, removing hard-fought Obama-era federal protections for millions of miles of ephemeral streams, drainage channels, as well as over 100 million acres of sensitive wetlands. Trump called it the worst examples of federal regulation run amok. U.S. Senator John Bozeman supports Trump's water rule.
Well, I think we really have to go back to the original act that created waters of the U.S., the Clean Water Act. And because of that act, we've had dramatic improvement in the water quality and things throughout our country. We can be very, very proud of that. On the other hand, when they wrote the act, they really didn't define what waters of the U.S. was very well at all. So it was open to interpretation.
Since 1980, all three branches of government have fought over how to interpret the meaning of which waters of the United States should be protected.
So in 2015, President Obama came out with a ruling that they hoped would clarify, but it was really very, very vague. And so how can people plan? Because it affected not only our farm community, but it affected you if you were going to build a house and there was a drainage ditch out front, development, all kinds of things that really directly affected everyone.
Bozeman, this year officially named ranking Republican member of the Senate Agricultural Committee, recently signed a congressional resolution in protest of Biden's intent, defending Trump's navigable waters protection rule.
And I think that this rule amongst the farm community and really people in general that are involved in development, involved in all of the various aspects of land use, have been fairly pleased with it. On the other hand, there's still controversy. So that's where we're at. President Biden now is looking at it, and they're trying to decide what they want to do in the future. But it is one of those things that we need to get settled in the sense, how can you use a piece of property, or if you're buying a piece of property, what are going to be the situations as far as usage? And we'll have to wait and see what President Biden and his administration comes out with. But this has been something that's been marked with controversy. I hope that we don't go back to the 2015 rule.
We queried several Northwest Arkansas water quality advocates, as well as Beaver Water District, about Biden's intention to nullify Trump's water rule. Only Gordon Watkins, president of the Buffalo River Watershed Alliance, agreed to speak on the complicated issue.
We welcome the recognition that waters are interconnected.
The Buffalo River Watershed Alliance is internationally known for successfully battling for 7 years to shut down an industrial swine breeding factory permitted by the state to operate just a few miles upstream of the Buffalo River, the nation's first nationally declared river. The alliance is among a coalition of 90 environmental and eco-legal defense groups commenting on the new rulemaking for an April 2020 U.S. Supreme Court decision against the dumping of partially treated sewage into underground lava wells on the islands of Maui found to be polluting nearby navigable waters, the ocean.
In particular, here in the Ozarks, where we live, our waters are very interconnected, and even our little ephemeral streams, which may be dry, apparently dry most of the year, still have a hydrological connection to other waters, including our groundwaters, where I get my drinking water from the side of the hill, where spring just pops out and flows to my house.
Portions of the Ozarks bioregion are underlain with karst, a solid limestone formation filled with channels and chambers through which surface water drains.
Being in a karst region, we're very sensitive to that interconnectivity. And the Obama administration's definitions of waters of the U.S. recognized that when they included ephemeral streams and non-adjacent wetlands and some of those things that that may seem benign on their own, but are actually part of our water system. And so we would welcome the Biden administration's efforts to reinstitute those Obama definitions and regulations.
Watkins is also a farmer who's grown acres of commercial blueberries. He doesn't consider the Obama water rule to be an intrusion on such business.
The Little Buffalo River runs right through the middle of our property. I cross it every day, and I'm sensitive to the issues of stream bank stabilization, for example, to prevent sedimentation of the streams. And so I don't think I'm unusual in that respect. I think most farmers want to protect their resources.
Watkins says suggesting that Obama's original Clean Water Act jurisdiction would vastly impede land use is not credible.
I'm sure for some people, developers in particular, that may want to go in and clear wetlands to build housing developments, for example, it's probably an inconvenience for them sometimes, but it's a short-sightedness.
He's referring to the ecological commons shared by all, which require protection by all. If Biden chooses to repeal Trump's navigable waters rule, reinstating Obama's definition for waters of the United States, his administration will likely be met with a surge of new legal challenges from red states, as well as impacted agricultural and industry interests. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Reminder, you can share any story you hear on Ozarks at Large by using links available at ozarksatlarge.com. You can also receive a daily Ozarks at Large email newsletter we send every weekday. That free service includes a rundown of what was on the show that day, and there are links there that let you click through the email and listen to the stories and interviews right then. Monday on Ozarks at Large, we'll spend time in Arkansas history again with Randy Dixon from the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. This Monday, Randy will bring us sounds from the work to integrate Little Rock Central. We'll hear the voice of Daisy Bates. We'll hear from the man who drove the nine teenagers to and from school. And we'll hear a portion of a meeting 25 years after the fact between one of those students and former Governor Orville Hobbs. It was a confrontation that played out live on national television. That's on Mondays, Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. The Oklahoma State Department of Health is reporting an additional 20 deaths from the virus in this morning's report. There have now been 4,132 deaths from COVID-19 in Oklahoma. 869 new cases of the virus were reported in that state during the last 24-hour testing cycle. Willow Creek Women's Hospital will host a blood drive Monday from 11 to 3:30 in the Community Blood Center of the Ozarks Bloodmobile. The vehicle will be parked in the hospital's parking lot on Great House Springs Road in Johnson. CBCO is issuing a critical appeal for all blood types after an increased need and a continuation of canceled blood drives. CBCO is the sole provider of blood and plasma for patients at more than 40 area hospitals. And this weekend on Hidden Brain on KUAF, being able to see what's happening around us can help us make smart decisions. But knowledge, especially knowledge of how others perceive us, can also hold us back, mire us in needless worry, and keep us from achieving our potential. This weekend, a look at the paradox of knowledge. Hidden Brain, tomorrow afternoon at 3 and Sunday morning at 6 on 91.3 KUAF.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents North Forest Lights, an outdoor, family-friendly light and sound spectacular. Open each Friday to Sunday after sunset through April 4th. Advance ticket reservations are recommended and available at crystalbridges.org.
Last night, in its regular meeting, the Washington County Quorum Court continued their discussion on how to best use the $4.5 million in CARES Act federal reimbursement funds the county received late last year for costs related to the COVID-19 pandemic. Washington County was awarded that amount largely for payroll expenses for employees in public safety and law enforcement jobs, but it can now be spent in any way officials see fit. After the issue was brought up in last week's Finance and Budget Committee meeting, Justice of the Peace Eva Madison sponsored an ordinance that would earmark $3.6 million of the CARES Act funds for immediate use and leave some of it in county reserves.
While Washington County did incur some unanticipated expenses relating to the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, all or virtually all of the payroll expenses for employees in the Washington County Detention Center that were used to justify Washington County's request for CARES Act funds were already budgeted for 2020, it did not require the expenditure of additional funds by the county.
Madison says the county already has $4.5 million in its general reserves, which is enough to cover future unforeseen circumstances. And despite the pandemic, the county's sales tax revenue was higher in 2020 than it was in 2019. Madison's ordinance proposes putting $1.2 million of the CARES Act reimbursement toward aid for small businesses, another $1.2 million toward hunger relief, and $1.2 million toward financial assistance for residents who are experiencing homelessness or struggling to pay for housing. The assistance would be distributed by contracting with other agencies and nonprofits that already administer similar programs.
What I have a hard time with is the fact that we all know what the CARES Act was for. It was for coronavirus. The only reason that we were able to get the $4.5 million that we got quickly and easily was because for an administrative convenience, the Treasury Department allowed us to submit salaries. No one in this court can sit here and tell me that we actually had $4.5 million in additional expenses from COVID, because our budget was close to where it should have been.
Several justices of the peace pointed out that they have yet to see a breakdown of the county's extra expenses related to COVID-19. J.P. Patrick Deacon says he's against any immediate decision on spending the $4.5 million because he's concerned about expenses related to the pandemic that the county may experience in the future.
Not all those expenses have been undertaken yet. We had a lot of elected officials last year, all of them, got together and cut their budgets. They did a very good job watching their spending, and they put off things. I would like to discuss with our elected officials what they're seeing on the ground. I don't think that we've done a thorough job with that yet. I'd like to understand more about what they're seeing, what they're expecting. I think it's a little presumptuous for us to think that we're out of the woods and we need to expend these funds all right now.
Meanwhile, J.P. Sam Duncan described the discussion about the funding as a disagreement about the purpose of local government.
I believe there's two purposes of government. That's to maintain law and order, and that's necessary shared services, which include basics like roads. And I think other people believe that government should do everything for people, and government is almost held to this level of it's going to be a savior. At the end of the day, all this money is coming from us, the taxpayers. So every dollar we spend unwisely and that we go out and spend on things that are not law and order and basic necessary government services, that to me is outside of the realm of government.
Public comment on the matter broke down along the same lines, with some residents encouraging the justices of the peace to hold on to the funds for a later time, and the majority calling on officials to spend a portion of it on assistance for residents. Nine of the JPs voted against Madison's ordinance, five voted for it, one abstained from the vote. The ordinance will come up for another reading during the Quorum Court's next regular meeting, March 18th. Washington County is also in the midst of distributing $7.1 million in federal aid that's specifically directed toward rental assistance. The Fayetteville Housing Authority and the Springdale Housing Authority each received $1.5 million to distribute to qualifying Washington County residents. Renters in need can apply for financial aid through those agencies.
This is KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. 20 degrees below zero. And we're not talking about wind chill, a temperature of 20 degrees below zero. The occasional snow and ice are one thing, but for most Arkansans, as well as Oklahomans, Missourians, and Kansans, these are temperatures never before experienced. How do you stay warm? What's your favorite snow day board game? Or maybe you know of a group or organization that might be needing some extra help during this Arctic freeze. Call the KUAF Connects line at 479-575-6577 and let us know how the cold is affecting you. That's 575-6577.
Here's hoping you are warm and well and rested. Thanks for being with us. This is a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. Earlier this month, the Walton Family Foundation hosted a three-day virtual conference about the organization's five-year strategy for working with people, communities, and organizations the foundation works with toward solving challenges. The conference covered many of the topics the foundation has paid particular interest in: the environment, K-12 education, and the home regions of the Arkansas-Mississippi Delta and Northwest Arkansas. One of the panels included at the conference was dedicated to Northwest Arkansas's growth and diversity, and why making sure more voices are heard as the region is expected to continue to grow. I moderated that panel, and over the next few episodes of our show, we'll hear some of the comments from the panelists. Benton County Judge Barry Mooring, Melissa Leilon, Executive Director of Arkansas Coalition of Marshallese, Rafael Rios, the founder and executive chef at Yiyo's Hospitality Group, and Allison Esposito, the executive director of the arts supporting organization, CASH. Today, we'll hear from Melissa and Judge Mooring, and we'll hear from Allison and Rafael next week on our show. I asked Judge Mooring about what he thinks the region has done correctly to be more inclusive and what the region could do better. He says he moved to this area with his wife to work with Walmart, and he didn't expect to stay beyond about 5 years.
This is such a more desirable place than even it was back then. The changes have been astounding and almost completely positive changes. A lot of the things that have happened here have happened because communities like ours around the country, but particularly this community, as we have become more diverse, if you see the diversity and the multicultural numbers grow, you've seen our prosperity grow. And I don't think that's by accident. I think there's a very good relationship between those two. And the best communities around the country are experiencing that as well. We have a much broader economy than when I moved here. I moved here to work for Walmart, which is pretty much why everybody moved here 20 years ago, or to work for a supplier of Walmart. And there's not a darn thing wrong with that. We all love that. But boy, our economy is so much more broad and diverse than that now than it used to be. So that's become a real strength of ours. I think there's a much stronger sense of entrepreneurship here than there used to be. You see lots of new business. You see lots of people trying new things here, which is terrific. We have a much wider array of cultural opportunities than before. And again, I think it's that influence that's come from around the United States, but also around the world that has come right here to Northwest Arkansas. We have terrific amenities that we didn't have 20 years ago. And so we've done a lot of things right. There's no doubt that this community we're on all the top lists of desirability. And again, so I feel like we made a really great decision 20 years ago, not even knowing how great a decision it was to come here. From a government perspective, that actually, I don't want to say it makes governing easier, but in a way it does. Our tax base is strong. We're able to invest in infrastructure. We're able to invest in amenities. Bond programs pass here because people want to reinvest back in their community. They see what's happening. Even things like in the next iteration of parks here in Bentonville, there's going to be cricket fields here. I promise you, there aren't too many cities of 60,000 that are passing bond issues for cricket fields. And so those are terrific things that have happened. And at the county, we've been very happy to pleased to be a part of that. But no, things are not perfect. You wanted me to talk about some things that we could do better. I think there's a few things that we could do better. And I think for a lot of people, 2020 exposed those. This year that's sort of in our rearview mirror, but not entirely yet. We had some things that have happened this last year that we know we need to work on. When COVID hit and the pandemic hit, it became readily apparent that a lot of us who were working in both state and local government needed to do a better job with some of the communities, the multicultural communities that were here. The Marshallese population, the Latinx population, they were devastated by COVID. And we needed to basically ramp up very quickly how we interacted with that community, how we communicated with that community. And it wasn't obviously just the county. A lot of folks had to refigure out, how do you provide healthcare in those areas? How do you talk to folks that frankly may not have been on your radar before? And so we had to do a lot better job there. I hate to say we'd be better prepared for the next pandemic because I hope there's not another one for 100 years, but the fact is we will be better prepared for the next pandemic. So that was clearly a gap, is there are pockets of people in our community right here, right now, that we haven't been doing as good a job in communicating and outreaching to as we could have. The other one that was exposed was the racial underpinning that's in our community. It's there. And that was certainly exposed by the protests from June, by the tragic murder of George Floyd and the resulting protests in Bentonville and the Bentonville Square. I was on top of the Benton County Courthouse when that played out, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I knew that from a local government perspective and from a leadership perspective, not just myself, but local mayors, we all needed to do a lot better job of understanding what were the underpinnings of that. And so we've been working on that the back half of last year as well. So I would say those are two areas where we definitely need to improve. And I think there's a lot of improvement to be made there.
Thank you very much, Judge. Appreciate the answer. Melissa, let me come to you. You during your time in Northwest Arkansas, you've worked with private sector, public, nonprofit, bringing awareness and representation from the Marshallese community. I'm wondering how important, why it's important that public, private, nonprofit work together.
Yeah, well, first of all, I also want to share with our audience that I'm also a veteran. I've spent 10 years in the armed forces. So commitment and serving the community is really something that I've always been trained and really love. I've came and fall in love with. But the intersectionality among these different sectors, the public and the private and the nonprofit, just so important in terms of raising awareness, ensuring that the underserved communities, marginalized communities are at the table. First, I want to also say these are three pillars in the makeup of the fabric to a community. And they kind of, I always tell my staff, they're the makers or the breakers. Either they make the community, and I like their strength, or they break down the community. And they are a very vital component in responding to the economic and the health crisis that we're seeing. And I think we all have seen that in the COVID-19 pandemic. And the collaboration among these three entities are so crucial, even more so, in responding to COVID-19. In the wake of a pandemic, our organization, and this is something, you know, this is an example that I'm using. You know, we use the data that we were seeing on the ground and really approach our legislators and let them know, hey, whatever policy that's preventing or barring Marshallese from accessing programs that they are paying into, we need to fix it now. Look at the death rate. The death rate here in Northwest Arkansas alone was over 50% at that time. I think that was like in May. So we really had to kind of look at new ways for us culturally, doing the right action and ensuring that our legislators are aware of what's on the ground is kind of not like, it's not part of our culture. So we had to step out of, the way we were looking at things and approach and make it very progressive, like a very a movement that would not only benefiting our people that we were serving, but also, you know, to me, it was an injustice that was done 25 years ago. You know, barring Marshallese from accessing things that they pay into 25 years ago to me, that was an injustice, and we all needed to fix it. And they saw that. I think there was a lot of understanding that there were a lot of health issues, but if anything, COVID-19 really elevated that. It highlighted all those underlying health issues and social issues as well, economic issues. So everything really, unfortunately, we had to use the COVID-19. But also what we learned from that, the partnership and the collaboration among these three entities are very important. Yes, we were able to collect these data, but if it was not for funding that we were, getting at that time from, the Walton Foundation on our Endeavor Foundation at that time, or Arkansas Community Foundation, it seemed like everyone really came together. And that was because we had a plan. We had a plan to ensure that the community in general understood where we were coming from.
Melissa Leilon is Executive Director of the Arkansas Coalition of Marshallese. We also heard from Benton County Judge Barry Mooring. Their comments were made during a panel discussion devoted to Northwest Arkansas growth and inclusivity that I moderated earlier this month. The panel was part of a conference hosted virtually by the Walton Family Foundation. Also participating in that conversation that afternoon were Rafael Rios, the founder and executive chef at Yiyo's Hospitality Group, and Allison Esposito, executive director of the art-supporting organization CASH, based in Northwest Arkansas. We'll hear from both of them on editions of Ozarks at Large next week.
In the background are bassist Charlie Hayden and pianist Brad Meldow, and I'm Robert Ginsburg, your host for Shades of Jazz. We'll hear more from Hayden and Meldow, as well as Pat Metheny, Peter Martin, Bill Frizzell, and much more. Tune in to Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday right here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. Joining me from her home office in Bella Vista is Becca Martin Brown, the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Happy Friday, Becca.
I just want to say that I left Kansas to get away from this.
Here we are.
And I want it to go back to Kansas. I don't care. Not a big fan of snow. I live in the wilds of Bella Vista, where I'm hoping the propane gets refilled before we run out of heat.
I hope so, for your sake, too.
So, you need things to entertain you, and I've got some, but we're going to start with the things you can do at home.
Okay, very good.
Because I'm not.
Not getting out.
The Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra has a concert tonight at 7 o'clock. And a lecture discussion. Mm-hmm. It will happen on Facebook, on their page, and they're going to talk about a composer named Irene Britton Smith, who you've never heard of. She came after people like Florence Price.
Mm-hmm.
She was working in the 1950s in Chicago. She was a music teacher, and she took her time off from when she was teaching and did things like go and study at Juilliard. According to her obituary in 1999 in the Chicago Tribune, she created about 30 pieces of classical music, and they've been performed fairly rarely, but her work came to light because a biographer who wanted to talk to her about Florence Price.
Okay. And Florence Price, of course, this Arkansas-born composer who is finally, years after her death, getting her due.
And so in the course of this conversation, the researcher found out that, oh, by the way, Irene Britton Smith was also a composer, and she had never actually met Florence Price in person, although she had corresponded with her. And so she was part of this biography, and now she's being performed. If you talk to people who understand these things, which I'll be the first to tell you I don't, Florence Price's music reflected her African-American roots. You know, she deliberately fused her African-American heritage music with classical forms. But Irene Britton Smith wanted to write classical music. And even though she has pieces like a spiritual called Let Us Break Bread Together, pieces like what APO is performing don't necessarily have that flavor. So it's a whole other interesting thing.
And it's safe to say that 99.9% of us who are hearing this concert tonight are hearing this music for the very first time.
I would say so. Erzsine Khan is performing. It's called Violin Sonata for Piano. And she's performing with Nathan Carteret. And she says that she first performed this work in Singapore.
Oh, how interesting.
So if you would like to hear discussion and this piece of music, you can do so at 7 o'clock tonight, free on Facebook. And if you're looking for a link, go to arphil.org and there'll be a link to it.
And now, will it be available after tonight, or is this a one night, got to be there right now kind of thing?
It is a live virtual performance, so I think it's a one-night, gotta-be-there kind of thing.
Fair enough.
And then if you're brave enough to get out and go do something.
Okay.
Good luck with that.
Yes.
There is an open house tomorrow at a place in Springdale that you might have known as Magnolia Garden.
But now
it's called Natural State Rockin' Republic, and it's a cycling retreat. Owned by a husband and wife couple, Scotty and Ernie Lechuga, who are bike racers, cyclists.
And we're talking like the human-powered kind of cycle.
Right. And so having bought this 10-bedroom house, they decided they had plenty of room to do something else, and they are calling it the Arkansas Artist Gallery. So in addition to this being a place they hope that cyclists will come and stay and bicycle around Northwest Arkansas and do all of those things.
Right.
They're also going to have art on the walls. And this month's art includes Matt Miller from Fayetteville And there's an open house from 10 to 5 tomorrow, and then an artist reception from 1 to 5 on March 14th. And there's also a new series of events happening at the Walton Art Center in Fayetteville that just makes me want to dance in my chair. It's called In the Atrium, and they're doing cabaret-style performances in the Walker Atrium. And they're going to have them all the time. They're going to have them on various nights of the week, and they're going to have them on Sunday afternoons. And they're going to have all kinds of music, bossa nova and jazz and classical. And it's free.
And this will be folks who are based here, correct?
Right. But there's a schedule on their website of what's coming up. And you do have to get tickets, of course, because they're only seating 72 people. And you can find out more at waltonartcenter.org. If you have cabin fever as bad as I do, and a hike around Devil's Den sounds fabulous but crazy, you can tag along with the Shiloh Museum's education staff tomorrow morning for a pre-recorded virtual history hike at Devil's Den.
Now that sounds really cool.
This happens at 10:30 tomorrow on the Shiloh Museum's Facebook page. And if you have questions, you can call 750-8165.
You said it was pre-recorded, but this sounds like another one of those be there at the time to do it.
No, it will continue to exist.
Okay.
Yeah, it will continue to exist.
All right. Becca Martin Brown is features editor of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Becca, hope the propane comes soon. Hope you stay warm. We'll talk again next Friday.
I will be here.
Support for KUAF comes from the Walmart Museum on the Square in downtown Bentonville. Scheduled visits are welcomed daily from noon to 6 p.m. WalmartMuseum.com to reserve your visit or for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large.
Oh, my gosh. Golly. Well, this is all going to... Dude, look at...
That's the sound of water pouring from the ceiling of a Harding University dorm after a pipe burst there Tuesday as temperatures in Searcy dropped into the negatives. It's a sight many Arkansans are familiar with following two snowstorms and days of record low temperatures.
Well, it was my daughter's 20th birthday, and my husband and I ran in town to pick up a cake we had ordered for her. And when we got back and walked in, I walked in first and just saw water pouring in our first floor half bath through the ceiling.
That's Susan Walters. She and her husband had just moved into a new house after coming to Northwest Arkansas from Colorado.
We didn't know where the water shut off was, which usually we're on top of things like that. But luckily, the people who live next door to us used to live in our house. So he found out from them where the main water shutoff was, and he got it shut off, and then, you know, just immediately started calling plumbers.
They managed to find a plumber who was able to close off that broken pipe, but then the Walters found another problem.
But when the plumber patched that, it turns out that it was the pipes are broken all under our second floor master bathroom.
So Walter says water started pouring into the screened-in sunroom that's directly below it. Between all the busted pipes and all the frozen ones, plumbers like Spencer Morgan have had a busy few days.
I'm on the south side of Fayetteville, and I'm fixing to crawl up under a house and fix a leak.
Morgan says at one point they started running out of heaters that could be used to thaw out people's frozen pipes.
You know, they usually bust on the hot side first. I don't know why. I think it's something, the vapor or something freezes in the hot side, and it's usually the first side to freeze, and then after that, everything freezes.
As you might imagine, insurance agents are getting plenty of phone calls, too. Stacy Carlson says at least two of her clients whose pipes broke in a bathroom are going to have major repairs to contend with in coming weeks.
One lady in the afternoon, she had left for lunch and came back 2 hours later, and the whole upstairs of her house had actually collapsed in. So in less than 2 hours, that much water can cause your ceiling to collapse from your second floor to your first floor. And then I had a lady that had actually happened in the middle of the night above her garage, same similar thing. It collapsed into the bottom floor.
And Carlson is urging patience as people start submitting claims to their insurance companies.
You know, there's only so many people that can get to different claims, and so they're working as hard and as fast as they can. But the first step is to get a restoration company out there, professionals that can help to start drying up, soaking up, getting the water out of the house. Because the longer that water stands, it's, you know, water's very damaging, very damaging. No matter what it touches, it hurts it. Houses don't like water on the floors, on the walls, baseboards, all of that.
Water cleanup was also in full swing this week at the Siloam Springs School District, which had pipes break at 6 of its main school buildings. With temperatures moving into the 40s tomorrow and abundant sunshine, the snow is endangered. And that means the sledding window is closing. Yesterday, Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth hiked over to Wilson Park in Fayetteville to capture some sounds of winter fun.
Elizabeth Quinn.
Charles Cunningham. There's this big ramp right there, and if you go straight on it, it's, like, so fun. And then when you think you're going to go straight into the water, you just stop, and...
We've been lucky. We haven't ended up in the creek. Yeah, we've seen a lot of neighbors out and about, and it's got a good community feel to it, for sure. People checking on each other and sharing, you know, everything from hot chocolate to space heaters.
Cold feet.
Cold feet, yep, lots of cold feet.
My name is Ammon Jordan. Well, this was a joint endeavor, City of Fayetteville employees, University of Arkansas employees. We built this fabulous 6-foot-wide booster that lands you in a luge course and takes you down towards the city pool.
Stop. All right. Woo!
That's fun.
Sounds of sledding, avoid that creek, collected by Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth yesterday at Wilson Park in Fayetteville. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Lee Creek. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. And Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Contributors this Friday included Jacqueline Froelich, Zuzanna Sitek. Zuzanna gave us news and sound about last night's quorum court meeting and about the plight of people with frozen pipes. And Daniel Carruth. Thanks to Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics and Becca Martin Brown, the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, for helping us out this Friday. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can find out more about us at ozarksatlarge.com. You can listen to us when you'd like on your schedule by subscribing to our free podcast version of our daily show. It's available through any of the major podcast distributors. And you can hear the most recent edition of our daily show by asking your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large. And we will be with you again Sunday morning at 9 o'clock for Weekend Ozarks at Large. And of course, we will return with new daily shows beginning with Monday's show next week at noon and 7 p.m. Thanks so much for your continued attention and continued support of this program and your public radio station. We do appreciate it. Back in the actual Anthony and Susan Hoy News studio after a thaw on Mount Sequoia, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for being part of us. We'll be with you again real soon.